Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Fans, and welcome to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. This is our WrestleMania special, isn't it, Quinn?
Wow, we're here.
We have made it. We are just days away from WrestleMania, and in the spirit of WrestleMania, we decided we would talk about some better times, perhaps.
Better than this year.
Better than this year. Folks, of course, I am Joe Murata. This is Mr. Michael Quinn. How you doing, Quinn?
Howdy doody.
Howdy doody. Folks, we are joined today, believe it or not, with the Smark Sensation from Saskatchewan.
Wow.
The one, the only, Scott Keith. How you doing, Scott?
Sensational, I guess.
He's gonna have to have sensational sherry, man.
Yeah, that'd be a great pairing. What do you think of that?
Wow. A little late now, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Scott, thanks so much, of course, for being with us here for another big event. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. I'm like the Roman Reigns of the podcast now, right? Keep pushing me.
Hey, Scott Keith equals ratings. That's what I understand.
These are our best ratings all year. It's the WrestleMania
That's right.
And Scott, we're doubling down.
Okay, well, I'm definitely not the Roman Reigns then, if that's the case.
You're getting ratings, so...
You're Goldberg.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, there we go. I'll take that.
All right, so folks, we are here not to talk about every single WrestleMania, because that would just take about 3 years.
Yeah, we don't have time for that here.
We don't have time for that. However, we will be reminiscing about some of the WrestleManias from wrestling's past. But before we do that, I would like to remind you of a few things. You can obviously check out our normal Monday podcast, Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Yes.
Episode number 25 will be coming out Monday, the day after WrestleMania.
Wow.
Yeah. You can also reach us on Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can also email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, we get emails. Did you know that?
Yeah, we do. We like to answer the emails, so please keep them coming.
Yep. And Quinn, I understand we have some other web presence somewhere else. Where else are we?
Oh, well, we're also on iTunes, where you can leave a review. It helps get the show known.
If you'd like
to do that, you can. You can go on Google Play Music, Stitcher, Blueberry, FM Player, all that nonsense.
Yeah, all that nonsense. I think we have a web domain or something,
too. Yes, and we do have a web domain. It's called ovppodcast.com, and
right.
You can get all the links and all the stuff I just talked about right over there.
Perfect. And Scott, where can people find you?
Oh, I have a MySpace.
I'm
just kidding.
Damn.
Of course, everybody can find me at blogofdoom.com, my home base. I'm also available here and there at rspwfaq.net, my secondary site. And of course, I'm also writing for thesportingnews.com as well.
Perfect.
I actually have a piece coming out this week dealing with WrestleMania. 7 WrestleMania matches that were teased but never delivered.
Ooh.
So that should be up by the
time
we're
producing.
Sounds like a very interesting read.
Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, I think we should delve into WrestleMania. Now, WrestleMania, it is the showcase of the immortals.
What is this WrestleMania?
The Super Bowl of wrestling. It's bigger than the Rolling Stones.
According to Jesse the Body,
it's bigger than the World Series. It is where legends are made. And before WrestleMania, the myth goes, wrestling was in smoky bars and, fat men smoked cigars and they punched each other.
Yeah.
Scott, when WrestleMania got started in 1985, was it really as revolutionary as the WWE makes it out to be? What's the real story here about all this?
Well, I mean, there was this other show you may have heard of before called Starcade that was around 2 years before WrestleMania. So, I mean, there is a certain amount of stretching the truth involved on Vince McMahon's part.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, especially with the smoky bars thing, you know, where wrestling was in tiny smoky bars for 100 people, except, of course, for the Shea Stadium sold that sold like 50,000 tickets.
Yeah.
In 1980, you know, like, yeah.
Definitely, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe they also had one in 72, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Vince McMahon's interpretation of this is like they were still in like carny tents or something, yeah. Like before yeah. This.
Like William Regal doing like, you know, matches with tough men and stuff like yeah. That, right?
Hookers and shooters and
hookers,
things like
yeah.
That.
Bears.
And bears.
Yeah.
And the fat guy, the local fat guy.
Yeah. Biggest man in town.
But I guess, Scott, what did make WrestleMania different? Let's give WWE some credit. What did make it different from what was going on at the time?
Definitely. I think the celebrity involvement was the main thing. That was it was the first show that was really like a mainstream success.
Right.
It was kind of built off, you know, the war to settle the score and things like that on MTV. But WrestleMania really ramped up the event portion of it to the maximum. Because before it was like host shows coming to your local market and going for the, you know, for one night or whatever. But this was the first one where they really did widespread closed circuit availability of it. It really made it into kind of like a national news event.
Scott, would you say Starrcade 83 did anywhere near the kind of business the first WrestleMania did? Or, I mean, we weren't there at the time, me and Joe, but...
Starrcade was very much more a local phenomenon. It did very big business closed circuit kind of in the South, but it wasn't something where it got any kind of national attention, or if you were like a fan in Washington or whatever, that you were going to have any kind of serious exposure to it.
That makes sense. One thing the first WrestleMania was notable for, like Scott mentioned, folks, was... the celebrities. You had relevant people, which is very strange to think about, but you had someone like, yeah, the recently retired and very much, you know, well-known Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, I mean,
was
that's
there.
Huge.
You had Billy Martin, who was a manager for the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
You had, obviously, Cyndi Lauper.
Yep.
So it was stacked in terms of celebrities.
Don't forget Liberace.
How could I forget Liberace?
Yeah. I pity the fool.
But, you know, I always found it interesting, and maybe Scott, I don't know if you'll share this sentiment, or Quinn, or not, but they had run MSG, obviously, on like a monthly basis at that point. And if you look at the show, just from an aesthetic point of view, it's shot and feels like a house show with, you know, higher caliber matches. And I always find that odd in retrospect, looking back. This was their biggest show they had ever done, and it looks like a house show from 2 weeks earlier.
Yep.
So, yeah, a lot of that was because they were still kind of cultivating the relationship with NBC. Dick Ebersol was actually really, really, really important in overhauling the look of the TV shows. Like, up until then, everything basically was shot like a house show. And Ebersol and the Saturday Night's Main Event people kind of came in and convinced Vince McMahon that he needed to go bigger even with it. So like up until then, the tapings for Superstars or whatever the shows were called in the different markets.
Sure, Championship Wrestling. Yep.
Yeah, Championship Wrestling. Yeah, exactly. They were shot in smaller TV studios, basically. And it was really Ebersol and the Saturday Night's Main Event people who came in and persuaded them to start shooting in an arena every week to make it look like, you know, this is the big time, right? Like even our weekly TV show is done in 16,000 seat arenas all the time. So that was actually a really important visual upgrade that they did. And you could tell even as you get to WrestleMania 2 and WrestleMania 3, then that it's a huge change in the presentation then overall for the product.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Scott, would you say there was resistance from Vince at the time to change the way it was filmed? Because I don't know, Vince seems like he'd be one to embrace that, at least in the 80s.
I don't know, because the thing with Vince is that he was one of the few promoters who was smart enough to take every cent that he made from the shows that he was doing and invest them back into the business. I mean, one thing you could say about, you know, guys like Jim Crockett and Vern Gagne is that they would make the money, but then they would spend it as fast as they could make it on themselves, right?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, like Vince was a guy, he was driven, right? He made $5 on a show. That $5 was put back onto improving the visual presentation. So I think Vince was probably, you know, all for it. He knew what he had to do to upgrade the look and make himself look like big time and everybody else look like small time.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's interesting. Speaking of money and speaking of investing money back into things, another one of the WWE's company lines is that WrestleMania was a huge gamble. And what I want to know, Scott, because I actually don't know too much about that, was it a big financial gamble? And if it was, how so?
They would have lost money, but I mean, the whole idea of like the company was going to go under was very understated.
Right.
Dave Meltzer went into a lot of detail of it in the Observers at the time that I was covering on the website. And basically it was, you know, yeah, it would be rough for a while. They'd be running in the red. and they probably have to scale down the business to a large degree. But it's not like WrestleMania was going to kill them if it didn't go off. And I mean, it really was a close thing, though. I mean, like, they had a huge amount of walk-up business on the closed circuit areas in order to make money on those. Like, it was looking, they were selling like 2,000 or 3,000 tickets per location up until about the day of the show. And then all of a sudden they had these giant massive sellouts of all the closed circuit locations to make the money off of it. But I mean, yeah, Vince was sweating like up until the day of the show. Like, he was sweating.
Scott, I actually have always wondered too, another thing about those closed circuit locations, was it expensive for them to reserve out all those closed circuit? I imagine that was the majority of the investment, because of course they'd run house shows at MSG all the time, and to the MSG people, this was just another show, I would assume, just every day.
Yeah, pretty much. And renting out the closed circuit locations was not a small amount of money, because they would rent out basically, like, you know, the full arenas for these people, right? So yeah, it was there was a lot of money that Vince had tied up in that, for sure.
And I suppose, not to mention paying the celebrities and getting an ROI on them, you know, some kind of return.
Exactly, yeah. Where, I mean, you know, nobody's saying that it wasn't like a huge risk and a huge investment on Vince's part, but I think it's, you know, Vince obviously does overstate the case a little bit in history where the company was going to go under if WrestleMania wasn't a success, because clearly that wasn't the case. I mean, if he had that much money to sink into it in the first place, I mean, like, you know, he's not going to bankrupt the company on one show.
I've heard Vince go so far, and I don't even remember I've watched so many documentaries on this, but I've heard Vince say that him and Linda were literally counting the returns the night of. It was that dire. And when they went in the black, it was all of a sudden, it was celebration.
Party time, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That does seem...
Vince has lied in the past about a couple of things.
No! So,
yeah, I know.
He's an honest man. So, WrestleMania, folks, obviously, at its genesis there, was basically what we talked about. It was filled with celebrities. It still is, and it has been on and off over the years. One thing I think that's happened, Scott, and you folks at home, and Quinn, too, over the last, I want to say maybe 10 years or so, maybe more, but definitely over the last decade, is that WrestleMania went from being the show that featured your hotly anticipated main events and other matches, right?
Uh-huh.
To almost selling itself and becoming more of a spectacle, more of what they've always said, the Super Bowl of wrestling, where it's going to sell itself on its name to whatever degree, but it's still going to sell itself on its name, not the main event, not the celebrity involvement. Scott, what do you make of that whole situation? Do you think it's a good thing that WrestleMania is now maybe the main selling point of WrestleMania?
It's a weird cyclical thing, because the early shows were, you know, had the big main event and then a whole lot of nothing on the undercard.
Yep.
And then, like, we went through a period where Vince was like, oh shit, I got to try now, and I got to actually get people to buy this show. And, you know, and then you have the hot shows up and down from WrestleMania 14 to like 20 or so.
Yep.
And then now we've come to the period where, yeah, WrestleMania basically is its own entity. And now it's to the point where he doesn't even have to sell it on pay-per-view, because he's got the same 1.5 million people watching on the network every month anyway. So, you know, who cares, right?
Like, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it's really interesting. So now it's kind of gone back that way again, where you got like the one match, it's Goldberg or Brock Lesnar, and then it's just like, okay, whatever. Then we'll say pick names out of hat. AJ Styles and Shane McMahon. There we go. There's a match. Yeah. So
right. Right. I mean, Scott, if I was to throw my 2 cents in there, I honestly feel it takes away from it. I know maybe they don't want to hear that, but at this point, it just feels like it could be any other pay-per-view. It feels like SummerSlam could rival it in importance because of the fact that they just sell it on its name now, you know?
Yeah, except that WrestleMania, of course, is 7 hours long. But I mean, right. Yeah, it is. It does feel sort of like, it's like any other pay-per-view except three of them at the same time.
Yeah.
It's true. It really is true.
I was talking to Joe today, actually, and this was just us shooting stuff around. And I was saying, I wonder if it would ever come to the point where they would air it on the networks like the Super Bowl and sell it off the ads.
You mean over the air networks like an NBC?
Right. You know, like if it went on NBC and it was like the Super Bowl where it was sold to advertisers.
Advertising money is just is shit for wrestling. It just would not make any financial sense for them to do that.
And even for WrestleMania, you think?
Even WrestleMania, yeah. I don't think there would be, especially now. I mean, there's not that much interest in, from the mainstream in the product. I don't think, I mean, God, look what how badly Saturday Night's Main Event did last time that it was on NBC.
That's true.
Fair point.
It was like giant test pattern ratings on there, so... Like, seriously, like, it was, you know.
I did, in our conversation, though, I did say it would probably do so much better for the show overall if it was actually reined in a little bit by advertisers and actually made to not be 800 hours long.
A filler.
Yeah.
For me, even, I think, I still think it was a gigantic mistake to take it off pay-per-view and put it on the network. I mean, I was perfectly willing to pay the, you know, $60 or whatever it was to watch WrestleMania on pay-per-view. Instead of just getting it for free on the network, you know, it's like I still don't understand that the giving the WrestleMania away for free strategy that they have there.
I personally believe the reason was is they couldn't sell the network without WrestleMania.
I think that's a very valid point, Quinn. And it's certainly I'll give them this. No matter what I think of Vince McMahon's product at any given time, if you're a wrestling fan and not a casual fan, but someone that actually likes to go back and watch old stuff. I mean, the network is the shit, and the fact that you get WrestleMania with that for free is great. However, I also get Scott's point that if you're a wrestling fan and WrestleMania didn't come with the network, you'd probably still get the network and you'd probably still pay the $60 for WrestleMania.
And I don't think Vince would have even... I don't think he by choice put WrestleMania on the network.
You think it was a necessity?
I think it was the financial people and the marketing people told him. You know, you don't have a choice really here.
I don't know, though. I feel you should have saved that card. You know, I just feel like put all 11 or 15 or whatever other pay-per-views on the network every year and then try it. And like, you know, if people really rebel against it and the buy rates really drop for WrestleMania and they're not making the money on the network or whatever, then be like, OK, network's been around for 2 years. Now we're going to give you WrestleMania for free on the network, you know? Like, you know, instead of just being like from day one, it's like a month, you know, after the network launch, you get WrestleMania for free on there. And it's like, okay, well, there you go. That's you've just played that card already and it's done, right? So now it's just a normal thing.
And now that they played that card, it seems like the genie's out of the bottle. They could never take WrestleMania off the network.
The toothpaste is out of the tube. Absolutely. Yeah. Like it's, you can't put it back on there. It's truly to the point now where I wouldn't pay $60 for a pay-per-view anymore now.
Right.
Like,
no.
You know, why? I get them all for $9.99 a month.
Yeah,
it's only $9.99.
Only $9.99. Well, it's more Canadian, but I mean, like, you know.
Well, down here, you know, we got the U.S. dollar still going strong for now.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of WrestleMania, I feel like we should very briefly touch upon this upcoming one.
Okay.
Very briefly, because I would much rather talk about the retro, but I would like to do our fans a proper service and give them a little insight into what the three of us might think about WrestleMania Sunshine, I guess it is.
That's the logo. It's not really a number this year.
I guess, Scott, you're the guest. Let's start with you. What do you really think of this card coming up?
I'm just not interested in it at all. It's really, really weird. Like, The John Cena Miz stuff was really amusing on SmackDown, I thought.
Yeah.
And, like, that's fine, I guess. It doesn't feel like a WrestleMania match.
Oh, yeah.
Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton are, like, burning down each other's houses and stuff. And it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, this is for the championship. Like, yeah. What?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know.
Scott, I have to say, I really feel like what a waste of John Cena. I know people will say it's a great program and all, but as far as marquee value, I still don't understand why they didn't pull the trigger on Cena versus The Undertaker this year. I really don't get it.
I don't know. Yeah, Dave was on the radio show talking about it, and his feeling is basically, well, you know, at least the Miz one gets, you know, the promos are going to be better, and Cena's actually going to have something to work with.
True.
But it's like, I don't know, but it just feels like, though, like, Cena's going out there and just making him look like a total geek who's... You know, who doesn't deserve to be in the ring with them, and it's a comedy feud, and it's fine as like a TV thing, but it's just, I don't know, it just does not feel like something that it was one of the backwards booking things, right? Where it's like, okay, well, we want to do this mixed match and have John Cena propose to Nikki Bella, so here we're just gonna, you know, 2 weeks beforehand we'll build up this match that nobody wants to see, right?
Right.
Like, yeah,
I'm just I'm thinking future forward here, I guess you'd say. I see the years on Cena limited, and especially on The Undertaker, and I guess in my brain, I've just been waiting for that. To see Cena and The Undertaker both seemingly wasted on things nobody wants to see. It seems like, why? Like, it's so upsetting to me.
It is strange. You know, one thing that I've been noticing, and Scott, I want to get your opinion here. I think they're kind of screwed from maybe a crowd reaction standpoint, no matter what they decide to put on last. And I can't fathom what they're... I am thinking either Roman, Undertaker, or Brock Goldberg is going to go on last, but I think they're kind of screwed either way. What do you think about all that?
Oh, I think Goldberg, Brock is clearly going to go on last, but then it's like, well, Brock's going to win, so right. Why?
Yeah.
So what's going to happen there? So, yeah, I am worried that, yeah, it's going to be Roman Undertaker last, and Vince is truly going to believe that people want to see him go, aroo, and hit the spear and hit him, you know? Like,
that's my money is still on that it's actually going to be Roman Undertaker last, and they're going to shoehorn in at the last second that The Undertaker's career is up for grabs here.
I don't know.
I mean, maybe they're holding out that decision. Maybe because they're not sure either, but
it seems, it seems to me like the last 3-4 years, there has been booking on the fly on the day of WrestleMania. And that's one of the problems with the way things are done these days. That and Hogan was always going over Andre. Warrior was always going over Hogan,
right.
You know, all this crap. Austin was always going over Michaels, even if Undertaker had to like look at him mean or something like that, whatever the story is, you know, Austin was always going over Rock, turning heel, right, at 17, all this crap, whatever you want to say, right?
There was a master plan, if
you
will.
But now they're calling shit on the fly these last few years, having people run in with briefcases and Halliburtons and halibut and salmon. I mean, it's getting ridiculous that they can't even decide what they're doing on the biggest event of the year until the day of.
Their whole year is based around this, and they don't.
Well, used to be.
I think it still is.
they got Roman versus Brock planned out for WrestleMania 34, though, so they have a plan.
Yeah, that's a great plan.
That's a great plan. Yeah, exactly. Everything's fine. Come on,
everything's fine. Oh man, so it's going to be a very interesting card to see, and I'm personally looking forward to that because I just want to see what happens. I'm going to try my best to enjoy it. You know, it's going
to
be
fun. Yeah, I mean, I always try my best to enjoy it. I mean, like just last year, God, just ground me down. I was just like, I was wanting to like it so much. And it was like 2 hours in and it's just like, oh my God. Like,
that was brutal.
This is what we have, you know, like it's not going to get better.
No,
I think something I haven't really seen talked about, but I have a feeling it's going to be a real drag on just enduring the show.
What
is the New Day hosting it thing?
Oh,
it's a New Day.
I have a feeling for whatever reason that's going to get annoying 3 segments in and you're going to just want to go get food in the kitchen or something like when they're just, you know, playing
on and on
or
and
something
on, yeah.
Over and over.
But don't
and
worry, Quinn. I'm sure The Rock will come out.
Yeah, and light his name on fire or whatever he wants to do this year.
I still have in the back of my mind like a 15% chance for like a Hulk Hogan appearance. I wouldn't be surprised.
You never know.
You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Austin, maybe.
I don't know about Austin, but I think Hogan is definitely a possibility pretty soon here now. I think
the storm has passed, right? I think a lot of that crap is blown over.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's getting ready to come back now at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, he seems to get more active on Twitter by the day now, too.
HH.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brother. Peace, brother. HH. Yeah. Well, anyway, folks, we have been talking, of course, with Scott Keith. I think what we should do here is take a quick break, get a reset, get in our time machine, and we will talk about some great moments from WrestleMania's past, because I know we need a mood lifter here. So, folks, we will be right back after this.
March 31st, it's WrestleMania. Get your ticket to the greatest sports entertainment closed-circuit TV spectacular of all time. Mr. T risks it all, wrestling for the first time, teaming up with champion Hulk Hogan versus Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. Guest timekeeper Liberace, ring announcer Billy Martin, referee Muhammad Ali. Get your tickets now to WrestleMania on closed-circuit TV. Don't miss it.
You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, the fastest growing weekly episodic retro wrestling audio podcast in the world.
Welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. This is our WrestleMania special, and we're talking with Scott Keith from Canada, all the way from Canada.
From Canada, okay. I'm just representing the country now. Excellent.
All right. The entire country.
All the way through the internet.
That's right. Uh-huh. Via satellite, actually.
Yeah, via satellite.
Oh, boy. Okay. So I think for our net, let's get into the retro stuff here.
Finally.
Yeah. And I figure let's just talk about some of our favorite WrestleMania matches, whether they're a main event or not, doesn't matter. And you know what, Quinn? Let's start with you. What do you got?
Well, I didn't want to start with the obvious. I mean, I think to us old school fans that this is definitely one we all love.
Okay.
But it always hit home with me, and I loved it. It's the Macho Man versus the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 7. I find that match just amazing. Like it always anytime I watch it back, I'm surprised at how much it still resonates. And you know, it's just such a good feel-good moment, and I feel like it a lot of that is missing from WrestleMania nowadays, those feel-good moments. And I don't know, it's a well-done match. I think it also does some stuff that I always think should be reserved for WrestleMania, like Savage doing the elbow drop 5 times to the Ultimate Warrior,
kicking out of each other's finishers.
It's just the right kind of match for WrestleMania.
Careers on the line.
Careers on the line.
Letting it all hang out.
Right, exactly.
Warrior walks to the ring.
Right.
He's all serious.
It exemplifies the spirit of what a end-all, be-all show should be.
Savage takes the shirt off.
Yes. Wow. The shirt off in 91 is rare.
That was a good deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Monsoon, there can't be a winner. Whoever stays, whoever leaves, leaves. But the call of this man.
Look at this! It's
over! Oh my God, no!
Scott, what do you think of the match?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite matches of all time, for sure. Randy Savage and Ultimate Warrior had like freaky good chemistry for some reason, which is really strange. Like, you know, Warrior was hard to be carried by pretty much anybody else. But I mean, you know, it's probably a hot take here, but Savage was a really damn good, you know, professional wrestler, and he could just, you know, he knew how to get the best out of the Ultimate Warrior, and you know, and I guess they trusted each other to do that. And yeah, and it was just, and of course, you know, the big turn at the end that everybody was waiting for, and paying off a whole bunch of storylines at the same time with, you know, Sherry and Elizabeth and the whole bit, and it was fantastic.
Elizabeth with her arms outstretched.
And now everybody's dead. So,
you know, thank you, Scott.
A little bit of a darker side to it, but hey.
Hey, I believe, Scott, I think you even said once, sometimes it can be Shakespeare. Don't let them tell you differently.
That's right. Exactly.
I always think Randy Savage, the one thing you could say about him is that he knew how to make his matches be a moment.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
And I feel like he might be one of the greatest big match performers ever.
That's not a unfair opinion.
Like when when I look at Hogan, I mean, like sometimes you can just feel like, oh, this is just any other Hogan match.
Sure.
But Savage, it was almost like when WrestleMania was there, he knew what it was all about.
Yeah. And if they gave him something good enough to work with, I mean, Rick Steamboat.
Right.
Hulk Hogan.
And he even made that mixed tag match fun.
Yes,
I mean,
he did.
I
Rhodes,
know it shouldn't
Dusty.
Be good, but it
sure.
is.
And of course, Flair at 8.
Yeah.
He had some good crap at WrestleMania. Scott, what's one of your favorite WrestleMania matches?
I mean, not even quality-wise, but just from my personal standpoint at the time as a fan was actually, believe it or not, at WrestleMania 4, Demolition winning the tag team titles from Strikeforce.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Nailed him with a cane right across the neck. If the ref gets up, Martel's covered. He one, sees it. Two. Three, oh, three, it's over.
I mean, it wasn't the best match, but I mean, that's what everybody was waiting to see. And it really set Demolition on you know, on a path to being kind of this legendary tag team, because everybody hated Strikeforce and was like, oh, you know, is it ever going to, you know, it's kind of like, you know, oh man, these pretty boys, you know, nobody really wanted to see them. And Demolition just came in there and beat them. And it was great. And it was the one match on the show that really woke up the crowd in Trump Plaza after 4 hours, you know? Yeah.
Yep.
I think You're right. I don't think it's stated enough, actually. I guess that really did set Demolition in their way, you know, like as one of the dominant tag teams of the late 80s, early 90s.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another just stupid note on that match. I always like the comment Gorilla makes about their outfits in the middle of that match.
I'm not sure those outfits are legal, Jess.
Yeah. And then Jesse responds, "I've been wearing them for months."
Yeah. So.
Not sure those outfits are legal either, Jess.
Oh, they've been wrestling with them for months, Gorilla. Come on.
I didn't say they haven't been wrestling with them. I just said I don't believe they're legal.
You know, one of the things about that match that I really like, Scott hit upon it, is the crowd. Demolition was heels, but they're one of the few things that get cheered at that WrestleMania. That must have been just indicative of how cool they were, even to the casual gambler cocaine crowd that was there.
Yeah, it's really weird how much, like, again, going back through the old observers, how kind of out of touch with it Dave was at the time. He doesn't really pay any attention to Demolition. You're out of touch. I'm out of time. Leading up to the match. And then they win the tag titles, and he's basically just, oh yeah, Demolition is the tag champs now. And it's just like nothing that would indicate that, oh yeah, these guys are going to be champions for like 18 months and set the record that was, you know, only finally broken now, you know, decades later. So
Right. Well, they weren't Japanese. So
that's true. They were not Japanese, yes. Although they did work a lot of matches in Japan afterwards, actually. The Japanese really loved them for, you know, because it meets up with the freaky Japanese S&M and Big American combination.
What was that other Demolition guy? The big Demolition? What's his name?
Crush?
No. The guy that Axe teamed in Japan with.
Blast?
Blast,
that's it. Big Demolition.
Blast.
That's what he looks like in that picture I always see on Google.
You know, and one more thing before we leave that match. It's interesting, looking back, what a different world. Demolition had been in the WWF for over a year at that point, and they were only then winning their first tag title. It's just amazing how things have changed.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that like Strikeforce was considered to be transitional champions from Hard Foundation Demolition. It's like they were champions for like 6 months. Like,
well, I guess that was transitional back then.
Yeah, I guess
that,
so.
That was transitional at the time, I guess. But yeah, it was just crazy.
It's amazing. I'm going to throw one at you guys, and you're going to look at me sideways, I think, on this one. But again, we're just talking, you know, silly personal favorite matches. And it's actually from WrestleMania 7 also.
I know where you're going.
You do?
Yeah, I think
it's
I do.
The British Bulldog, yes, against the Warlord.
Wow.
It's good.
It is surprisingly good. I used to kind of when you said that, but yeah, it is. I'm surprised how much it held up. It's very stunning, actually.
We have watched that match recreationally, you and I.
It's just a fun, stupid thing in the middle of WrestleMania 7. It's just entertaining for some reason.
It's just entertaining. It's better than you'd think it would be. You know, it's better than it has any right to be.
Yeah.
That's my two cents there.
And I mean, we're just throwing out, if we're throwing out random weird ones, I also like Tito Santana versus the Barbarian at 6.
Yeah.
Well, that had the all-time great bump from Tito Santana, yes. So that's fair.
Yeah. And you know, we had said at the beginning something about how we were going to talk about, like, you know, weird WrestleMania, like, squash matches.
Yeah, sure.
Like, but, like, those are the kind of things that, like, those two I always think of, especially with that kind of thing.
No, it's true. There was a different pacing to the older WrestleManias, because you would have like these squash matches.
Well, the older ones too were kind of based around the kind of the old territorial style of building the big shows, where you had the main event and then you had all the stuff underneath just to, you know, get up to the main event.
Right.
Essentially now, right? Next, as opposed to today, where you have 17 different world titles dependent on the show. So you have to space it out over there, and you have to have the cool down match and, you know, this and that, right? So,
right.
Yeah. So it was a different way to build it. I think, speaking of WrestleMania 7, I mean, just in general, I think I consider it to be kind of an underrated show.
Oh,
I feel like it's gotten a bad rep over the years. It doesn't really deserve, I think. I mean, it deserves some of it, but I mean, like, you know, the Rockers versus Haku and Barbarian was a hell of an opener, I thought.
Hell of an opener.
Yeah, great opener.
Yeah, like, I mean, that match is very underappreciated, and apparently you guys think that British Bulldog and Warlord is underappreciated. But
go look back, Scott.
Yeah, check it out, man. Yeah. I'm telling you.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, Seven had some really... had some pretty decent stuff on it, I thought. I mean, there are people as well who will even defend the blindfold match, which I don't really understand. But, you know, that's to different spokes. And I think, you know, as far as a Hogan match goes, the Slaughter one is one of the kind of the better ones that he had at WrestleMania.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Slaughter bumps, Hogan bleeds, you know, it's got some fire to it. And it's also, you know, it's notable WrestleMania 7 for the Hart Foundation swan song against the Nasties.
Mm. Yeah, that was a good match too. Yeah,
yes, it is.
I mean, I always have a problem with that. It's the Nasties that end it, but
that sucks.
And I know, yeah, the Nasties were great elsewhere, but I never thought they were.
That match pisses me off to this day. Yeah. The ending.
Yeah, it's really silly. It's like that. Just seems like a dumb way for the Hart Foundation to go out
to a motorcycle helmet.
Yeah,
that he never wore before that. You know,
weird. It is weird.
Macaulay Culkin's in the audience at that WrestleMania too.
Buzz, your girlfriend. Woof.
Yeah, and Donald Trump's in the audience at that WrestleMania too. Yep.
What an unbelievable day. It's a fantastic job. Fantastic.
You're just watching these matches, Tom.
I love it. I'm here with a group and we love it.
And Lufa Wegno.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, this is unbelievable because my family here was wonderful about it.
And Fonzie.
Fuck Fonzie.
Yeah. I'm really great. The Ultimate Warrior got his ultimate win. That whole nonsense. Yeah.
I want to tell you, I'm so happy that the Ultimate Warrior got his ultimate win.
Thinks he's a big wrestling fan. Never see him again.
All right. Let's throw to you, Scott. You got another favorite WrestleMania match?
Oh, I have many of them. Well, we'll move up a little bit now, I guess. Back under the category of the oddball matches that ended up being really good, I'd have to throw Roddy Piper versus Goldust from WrestleMania 12 in there.
Hmm.
It's just kind of a wacky, underrated one that kind of set the stage, too, I think, you know, where the business was going in the years following that as well, I think. So just like the fact that it was shot like a, you know, backstage segment, basically, and more like a broken Matt Hardy segment than an actual wrestling match. Yeah,
I think that's a really interesting pick. I haven't watched that match in years because I think I was thrown off by using the OJ footage, and I was like,
"That
is
that's very Vince."
Yeah, but actually, you know, you're kind of right on with that. I haven't thought about that in so long, but I mean that the business did go in that direction of backstage brawls.
Sure. It's a little ahead of its time.
It is.
Like the whole hardcore wrestling direction that they went in, you know, 2 or 3 years after that, right? It was kind of, there was a lot of influence in there on that. Yeah. In a similar vein, also, I guess I would say, actually, then, like, Randy Savage against Crush from WrestleMania 10.
Yep.
As well.
I always liked that one.
Kind of same thing. Yeah, it was, you know, wasn't a great match or anything like that, but I think it was, as far as, like, what turned out to be Savage's swan song at WrestleMania, you know, it was, you know, quite decent for what it was.
It was, and he got a nice clean win. Well, clean. I know, Quinn, you have a problem with something in that match.
Don't like the whole him tying him up, and it, like, it's so hard for him to tie him up. Like, it just, it seems like they just thought that up on the fly. I don't know what's going on in that. It takes so long, and he gets him up, and my favorite part is that he just falls, and he's still, like, loosely not really tied up, and he's just pretending to, like, struggle, and he can't get back to the ring. It is just a weird thing at the end there.
It's a very weird stipulation too, because it's falls count anywhere, but then you have 60 seconds to get back. Was that ever a thing? I've never heard of that outside of that match.
I don't know. Yeah, it was a weird, it was like their first try at a last man standing match or something, but yeah, I don't
Well, isn't that like a Texas death match, I guess?
I don't even know. Yeah.
Kind of you get knocked out.
10 count.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's a Texas death match with false count anywhere, I guess, in 60 minutes or 60 seconds.
They hated each other so much that one stipulation could not contain it. They had to had to bunch them together and find a new hybrid match to contain it, yeah.
I'm going to give you guys one of my favorite WrestleMania matches, and it's, believe me, it doesn't involve the British Bulldog or the Warlord this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, I have to throw it out there because it's my favorite maybe match ever, and just happened to be at the opener of a very good WrestleMania, and that, of course, is Jacob Neil Blue. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
Bret Hart versus Owen Hart from WrestleMania 10.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
One of the best matches I've ever seen in my life. I don't think there's a way to describe it otherwise for me. It is just crisp, clean wrestling. Everything, it looks good. The storyline surrounding it is good. The storyline within the match is good. I love that match. Scott, what are your thoughts on that one?
Oh, well, I mean, of course. Like, and it was, you know, of course, Bret Hart was determined to go out there and make his brother look like, you know, a superstar world champion in that match, right?
And he did.
He succeeded, right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, that was the match that made Owen Hart, turned him from, you know, the mid-carder, the Rocket Owen Hart, into, like, you know, the guy who was someone that Vince could plug into main events for the next 6 months. And clearly it was fantastic. And yeah, my dad and I were watching the show at the time and just losing it over that match. And yeah, it was great.
A victory. No.
Yeah, the actual wrestling in it is something that you rarely even saw at the time. I mean, Bret Hart was putting on good wrestling matches.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
but that's a clinic in a lot of ways for that mid-90s style. And you don't see a lot of that psychology in that way. I'm not saying you don't see psychology, but, you know, you don't see a lot of what they did all the time anymore in the WWE.
Yeah, I would say that the closest you got to the kind of psychology, and I don't know, that, like you said, that mid 90s style,
yeah,
the main,
you know,
event
what I
style
mean, right?
is Bret and Shawn Iron Man match. I feel like that's the closest at a WrestleMania,
and that's a good match to talk about, I think, too.
Yeah, I if we were just to transition to it, great match.
It is
great moment for Shawn. Mm-hmm. Great. I mean, there's nothing that's bad about it. I just think its rewatchability has always been an issue to me.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I mean, it's a great match, but I never want to watch it again in my life. Right. I've seen it like 2 or 3 times for review purposes, and it's just like, I have seen everything I need to see out of this match, essentially.
Right.
Pretty much. It's good. It's solid. I mean, it's an hour, and you know what you're getting into, and it can be a little difficult at certain times. It's not an hour, I'd say, that flies by.
I think as a live event, as one of the first WrestleManias I saw live, it does. I always have a, you know, attachment to it because I remember watching it as a kid, and it was edge of your seat watchable when it was aired live to me.
If you read the observers from the time, Dave really buries the match though, because I mean he was there and he was talking about how the crowd was emptying out during the match and stuff.
Well, that's
so, I mean,
upsetting.
Like, isn't Anaheim also a notoriously shitty crowd too, though?
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, yeah, I mean, like, it was, they were shooting for a very Hollywood crowd, and then and that sort of crowd was just not into watching, you know, the hour long match.
Right.
Right.
And yeah.
Plus, that's an era where the fans weren't conditioned for main events really over 15, 20 minutes anyway.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That was the other thing, too. It was a very out of nowhere thing. And it's really hard to pull off that kind of hour long match for people who don't know how to deal with something past 15 minutes. Like, there's a lot of training and it's kind of a misfire, I think. Like, I really do think they would have been better off just going with a normal 15-minute match between Bret and Shawn and putting something else on the undercard. Because, I mean, it really did kind of cripple the undercard of the show as well,
you
right?
Couldn't because, do you anything know, long.
Couldn't
yeah.
do anything long. Yeah, exactly. Like, it was really that match and then a bunch of other nothing, essentially.
It's a shame, too, because I think they both competitors put it all out there.
They
put out the best things that they can possibly do. And if you're a fan and you were watching then, it really felt like this is it. Bret and Shawn, you know, putting it all out there and whoever comes out is the better man, you know?
Yeah, which is not what happened, obviously, because, you know, Bret obviously is the better man and he didn't win.
Well, you know, we disagree on that, but yeah.
No, Quinn and I notoriously, you know, have a rivalry over Bret versus Shawn.
Yeah.
I happened to see that live, too, and I was so pissed when Shawn Michaels won. So I'm on the other end of that spectrum, but and yeah.
I was actually cheering for Shawn at the time, by the way. Like, I was...
Really?
I was kind of over... Yeah, oh no, I was like really over Bret Hart until the Hart Foundation thing came around.
I could
the next
see
year.
So, he was waning a little bit till he turned heel.
Yeah, no, he very, very much was, yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it really, I know a lot of people have their issues with the overtime, but as a stupid, you know, 10-year-old kid, I'm like, these guys are so good that they can't be contained in 60, they can't
sure.
beat each other in 60
sure.
minutes. So I guess they were able to successfully sell the logic there to me as a kid.
Yeah, I get it. That makes sense.
You know?
No issue there. Quinn, you happen to bring up the Iron Man match, but why don't you give me another one of your actual favorite matches?
Well, you know, like we were saying, there's many, here's one that often gets mentioned, but I think it's probably the most superior WrestleMania main event, Rock Austin 17. I just really love that match.
Yes, you do. So do I.
In every aspect. I think it's what a main event ought to be.
I will give you every drop of sweat, every drop of blood, every ounce of energy I have. You are going to get the absolute best of The Rock at WrestleMania. I need to beat you, Rock. I need it more than anything that you can ever imagine. There can be only one World Wrestling Federation champion, and that will be Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
If you're looking at the guys now who compete, they should be looking at that match.
You think so?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because you know how I said how, you know, a lot of the stuff reserved for a WrestleMania main event, like Randy Savage with the elbows.
Reversing finishers.
Yeah. And
kicking
stuff like that.
Finishers.
That stuff should only be reserved for WrestleMania. And that is what that match is. And I think that match, unfortunately, what ended up happening out of it is reversing finishers became a normal thing. But that I don't remember, like, before that being a common thing.
Every now and then, but
at WrestleMania. I mean, the other stuff that gets me about that match is that you have an emotional attachment to The Rock and Austin, and you had followed their careers.
Sure.
And I loved the fact that Austin whipped out the $1 million dream.
That is
a detail that you don't see in WrestleMania main events. A callback to
five, six years earlier.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's just amazing stuff. And I know people have a problem with the ending, right? But I mean, if you're going to end Austin kind of as a thing, I mean, you might as well just, he went to the dark side and that's the end of him. You know what I mean? Like,
well, the ending was kind of, it kind of did make sense in the context of it, in that, you know, Austin couldn't beat him with all of his other moves. And so finally he just goes with the nuclear option and just, you know, beats him down with a chair and pins him. And I mean, that didn't even have to be the heel turn. Like they really, you know, it was really like uniting with Steve, with Vince McMahon and everything like that was kind of overkill on top of it. Like, I think Austin could have just done that and people would have been fine with it, because he's he's a rattlesnake and he's an asshole and everybody knows that, you know. And it's just like, he doesn't have to win his matches clean, right? He could go out there and beat the shit out of the guy with a chair and get the pin, and people would understand that it's part of the character. And then later on, if you want to, then you could do the thing with Vince McMahon. And it just ended up being the problem with the finish was that it was just too much with, you know, Vince being in there and directing things, and it made it feel like a less important moment for Austin, because he was, you know, it was Vince's moment and not Austin's moment. And that was, that was really the main kind of problem that I had with it, I think.
Say what you will, all valid points, Scott, about the ending, but I was just going to say, there is some tiny touches in there too, to make Rock look strong at the end, where I believe Austin hits him over the head with a chair and tries to pin him. Mm-hmm. It still doesn't work.
Yeah.
I actually like the idea. And I know, Joe, you say this a lot, but this applies to a chair shot thing. You always say, why does the wrestler not just try to pin him again if he's weak?
Yes.
I like that Austin, he hits him with a chair, it doesn't work, and then so his option is hit him over and over and over again with a chair and then pin him.
I love that.
It makes The Rock look great.
Yeah, it does, in a way. Yeah,
because it's like, that's what it takes to beat The Rock.
Right.
It's like...
Right, absolutely. I think that match... It's unfortunate that in hindsight it became, you know, viewed as the end of the Attitude Era. I think that's partially timing, coincidence, a lot of different things.
Right.
The invasion angle certainly didn't help matters. But as far as a WrestleMania main event for the Attitude Era, for any era, but for the Attitude Era especially, Austin Rock in front of 60-something thousand people, 25 minutes they probably went that match. That's a pretty long match.
Mm-hmm. That was a long match,
captivating the whole way through, unlike some of the Shawn and Brett stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a great main event at a great WrestleMania. I'm with you. Scott, why don't you give me one more, and then maybe we'll move on to something else. What else you got, Scott?
Well, I think actually one that's a forgotten classic that gets overshadowed by other stuff going on in WrestleMania 20 is Eddie Guerrero against Kurt Angle for the world title there as well. Yeah, like I think, you know, obviously at the end it's the big celebration with you know, Benoit and everything like that. But I think the Benoit stuff really, you know, has unfortunately overshadowed everything that happened on there. That was like a pretty super match. I mean, that would have stood as a high-level main event match on pretty much any other WrestleMania as a main event. And, you know, Eddie Guerrero pulling off the boot and, you know, retaining his title.
Yeah,
and everything. Yeah, like, you know, that was brilliant, I thought.
That's a great ending. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a really good ending. I, you know, believe it or not, I haven't really watched that match in a long time. You're making me want to go back and watch it now. But yeah, I do remember being actually surprised,
right,
that Eddie went over. I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought Kurt was going over too in that match. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Because Eddie had won the title, what, a month earlier, right? He was already the champion, if I'm not mistaken.
He was the champ going in, if I recall. Yeah.
And he, yeah, that, and Kurt, obviously, I mean, Kurt.
Yeah.
For crying out loud, Kurt Angle.
Yeah, you can rely on him to show up.
He had a great match with Michaels the next year, too.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
He did.
That's another personal favorite of mine.
Yeah, that one's great, actually. That's another one that's overlooked.
It is, yeah. I don't know what happened to that one. Like, you know, like Shawn Michaels, you know, it was high profile enough that you think people would remember it. Unless it's just a thing, you know, with Kurt Angle being erased from history for a while there, that it doesn't get the love it deserves. But I mean,
yeah.
God, like that, the whole bit I was watching in the movie theater, because WrestleMania was, you know, they did it in movie theaters here for a while.
Really? Still at that point?
Yeah, still at that point. And there was like, the theater was going crazy when Kurt Angle had him in the ankle lock, right? And just like, yeah, you know, people screaming at him to tap and stuff. And it was really, really fun match, I thought.
Yeah.
The only thing that brought it down too much was really Shawn being in the deadly ankle lock for, you know,
17
minutes or whatever it was. Yeah.
But he's Shawn Michaels, though.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels.
Maybe that's what they were trying to say.
He doesn't like the job. You're right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, you know, that he's just such a legend. It's going to take a long time.
His ankle is legendary.
Yeah, his ankle is it is legendary.
He was really training the ankles in the pre-match thing, right?
That's what that stomp is before he does a super kick.
Yeah.
He's training his ankle.
Maybe his ankle was strengthened after those punks in Syracuse like messed up. It was like reinforced later on.
Although I'm always reminded of Jesse Ventura. What is it? Like, you can't train the eyeballs in.
Yeah.
Right? You know, because, you can always poke the guy in the eye.
Always poke him in the eye. You know what? That's a perfect segue, Scott. Jesse Ventura. WrestleMania was cool in not only obviously for the celebrity factor, for the wrestling factor and the unique feel of it. Some of these early WrestleManias had iconic stick in your memory, capture the moment commentary. And I'm talking about Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura, first and foremost. Those two didn't work together at that time on almost anything other than the pay-per-views. So, because Gorilla was with Bobby, usually.
Right, on Challenge.
Jesse was with Vince. So for the two of them to come together just added, for me, you know, looking back, like Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse Ventura, WrestleMania 6. It's just like, this is it. Everything is just coming together here. You got the best of everything. And some of the iconic lines I always reference, Gorilla Monsoon from WrestleMania 3, the irresistible force meeting the immovable object, you know, and it's just gorillaism, but it's just a perfect fit for that. And some of the things that Jesse said, that's just one thing I feel like we need to mention is the commentary used to add to the show. Now it might as well not be there. And I know that's not exclusive to WrestleMania. It's in general.
Right.
But specifically with WrestleMania, I feel like there hasn't been help from the commentary team in a number of years to help
probably
with
since
the experience.
JR and King have been gone.
Yeah.
As far as a team.
I guess so. What do you think, Scott?
Gorilla Monsoon, of course, was not without his moment of inanity.
Of course.
In the early show. I mean, you know, like during the famous Savage Steamboat match where Savage clotheslines him and Gorilla declares that he could be suspended for deliberately trying to injure Steamboat, right? Like, Jesse just gives it like the most eye rolling, you know, reply of disdain possible after that, right?
That could have been a disqualification too, Jess, that kind of a clothesline.
For what?
Deliberate.
Deliberate? Of course it's deliberate. What do you think? He fell into it by accident?
No, but it's a deliberate effort to put a guy out of commission, and that could be construed as a disqualification.
That back and forth was always one of the best parts about that team, though, is that Jesse was new age and Gorilla was old school.
Yeah, Jesse didn't take any shit. You know, like that was what was great about him, and even carried over when he went to WCW.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you know, unfortunately, once you get into the Michael Cole era, then that's really when when things fall apart on it. I mean, it was mostly just forgettable with Vince McMahon in the middle there, right?
But,
Yeah,
it was tolerable.
The only thing I can really remember, there's a couple of things. Him yelling about the Federation blasting off into a new era at the end of WrestleMania 10, you know?
Yeah.
It's a new era!
Yeah.
We are witnessing, ladies and gentlemen, a brand new era. Bear witnessing the blast off of the next decade in the World Wrestling Federation.
Well, I mean, you know, I will say one thing that when you know, Vince doing the on the commentary is that at least then, you know, Vince is the guy who knows the story that he wants to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
That's
and, you know,
true.
So you're going to get the story from Vince that
that
Vince
can
wants
it.
To hear. Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Vince was, you're right, though. For the most part, he was kind of forgettable.
Yeah.
But he had his moments. And then JR. Austin.
Don't forget,
you know?
Bobby the Brain, too.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't tie him to any... Well, the Flair match at WrestleMania 8 is one of his best performances.
At a WrestleMania?
At a WrestleMania.
Yeah.
He's incredible there.
Yeah.
Take a look! Take a look! Roll out of the ring! Do something! Big backdrop! Get up! And then a close line! Stay by the ropes! Stay by the ropes! And another one by Savage! Get out! Get out! Get out! What a perfect...
I mean, Seven, he's kind of the MVP.
He's hilarious.
There's so many good lines at Seven with the Lou Ferrigno crackers line and the, and like just
Fred Catal.
The whole Fred thing Catal, with the Catal match.
Hand towel. You have to eat 1,100 bowls of rice in under an
and
hour.
And by the end, he's calling him Fred Hand Towel. Like, it's just, I mean, when Bobby gets bored at a WrestleMania, that's when you get the best Bobby stuff.
What's his name? Hand towel?
Catal.
Oh, he's a big fortune cookie, isn't he?
You have any idea, Brain, any conception what it takes to become a grand champion?
Sumo? Oh,
sumo?
Yes. You've got to eat over 1,100 bowls of rice in an hour.
Sorry I asked.
With chopsticks. One stick.
Will you stop? Need to make a tag to Tenru.
I think he should throw in the towel.
What towel?
The towel.
Catal is the guy's name.
Hey, same to you.
You'd have trouble if his name was Fred.
His name's Fred Catal?
No.
A silly name for a Japanese wrestler, Fred. Looks like Fred is dead.
I don't want to cast aspersions on his morals or anything like that, but I feel like Bobby might have been under some sort of influence at WrestleMania 7. I'm just thinking, you know.
Possible.
I don't know.
Possibly.
You
know. As long as it didn't come close to anything like at Hog Wild 96.
Yeah, that's the line, but.
Where he's like calling the giant Andre.
Yeah.
Well, we've lost perspective, Bob. Is Andre.
That it is true that the fact that we can remember these, and I know that we have, you know, we're like Rain Man over here, probably the three of us when it comes to remembering stuff from WrestleMania and from wrestling, but the fact that so many people remember the commentary team, remember the things they said,
remember lines,
specific lines,
weird off lines, like just strange stuff.
Because I mean, I see it on your blog all the time, Scott. You know, I like to join in on that fun where we just quoting Bobby Heenan, quoting Gorilla Monsoon, you know, just referencing shit like that. I don't remember a damn thing Michael Cole has said in 15 years.
Nope. Yeah, exactly. I feel like, though, at WrestleMania X7, for example, the Jim Ross, Paul Heyman team was really underrated, too. Like,
they felt
like a real throwback, you know, like to the good old days, I think, for them. With a good heel commentator.
I loved that team.
Yeah,
I wanted it. I thought that was, if King was going to be gone, then this was going to be what it should be.
JR and Heyman were funny as hell together.
Paul, I'm very sorry you're not going to be in this next gimmick battle royal. I'd have loved to see you in tights for some first
I'm not the one wearing the stupid cowboy hat either.
Nice ponytail, though. Thank you.
Yes,
they were.
And they can call the drama, too. It's like JR and, obviously JR, but Heyman can sell the drama of a match,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't lose anything, you know? And they would just bicker. It was awesome. It was very much a throwback.
Yeah. I think if we're going to talk about these commentary teams, just to kind of sidetrack just briefly, what about the backstage interviewers, too, were another highlight of WrestleMania? Like, I know, obviously, Mean Gene.
Of course.
Always. And, you know, like, just I always love this, you know, just the little quips he would do, like, backstage, like, Longfella couldn't say it any better. And, you know, like, just there was this signature to how WrestleMania backstage interviews went.
Mooney did some.
Yes, and Mooney, I didn't want to jump to Mooney too quick, but Mooney's got, you know, one of my favorite interviews with Brutus the Barber. He's like, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, what are you doing? Yeah. And then, like, it's just stupid stuff.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake, what are you doing?
Not trying too hard,
like the Mary Hart thing. No, not Mary Hart, Mary yeah. Richards.
No. Thing. Oh, you mean
yeah.
Mooney?
Yeah, Mooney.
But Mary Hart was good too.
Mary Hart was good
Savage.
Too. Phone number's on the back of my license plate. Yeah.
Yep.
But I was just going to say that whole interview with Mary Tyler Moore with Mooney is something, all right.
She has no idea what's going on.
And him interviewing children about what they think about hunka hunka hunky love. And this is all just silly stuff, but it's all memorable. It just is.
You know what? Now, that reminds me. I would take Rhythm and Blues as this year's musical performance over whatever the hell it is this year.
Do we have a musical performance this year? I don't know.
Well, it's probably Snoop Dogg. If it's anyway.
How are they going to kill time then? What else are they going to do?
Put on wrestling matches? Come on.
No. Wrestling matches? This is WrestleMania.
Yeah.
We don't have time for wrestling matches.
There's no fighting in the war room. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, I can just... when it comes back to commentary real quick, I can just already picture if facetiously, Roman Reigns beats The Undertaker.
Yeah.
if Michael Cole, you know, the big dog has his moment. It's just going to be, it's so cliched and garbage, you know?
It just sounds like Vince is talking in his ear and telling him what to say.
It's almost like Vince is screaming in his ear. Not that Vince would ever do that, but, you know. Quinn, you were talking about backstage interviewers.
Mm-hmm.
That's reminded me of, you know, when you said Mary Hart by accident. The celebrities used to be utilized in a much more natural and subtle way.
Well, I mean, I think the best one of the bunch, and this might just be me, but Regis. Regis's interviews were amazing at Seven with I think he talks about the warlord and something about how he turned over a Domino's delivery truck and all this, and I don't know, Regis was just,
earthquake, I think,
or earthquake, that's it. And just Regis was something. Like I and that to me alone, I know this is so stupid, but like Regis's performance at Seven as a backstage interviewer was so memorable to me, is that I feel like it just warrants him being in the Hall of Fame. And I say every year when it's not Regis as a celebrity, I just get sad.
Yeah, well, what about Steve Allen at WrestleMania 6?
Oh, acoustic environment. Yeah,
you know, there was a guy who, you know, who understood the whole Carney nature of the whole thing too, right? Like he was around from early days of TV, so he knew the deal there too, right? And he knew how to play along with the dumb skits and Vince McMahon's sense of humor. So I think he was kind of underrated as well. I feel like
he was very good. He was funny. He legitimately gets me laughing in that skit in the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly.
The Bolsheviks.
yep. And funny. Actually, he's great on commentary during Snooker. A match. Okay, I was going to bring this up in the random like weird matches that we like at WrestleMania, but that match with Rick Rude and Snuka, although not notable for any reason whatsoever, for whatever reason, with Steve Allen on commentary in the mix there, I am like, it's to me the perfect cool down match before the main. Like I've never seen it done that well, where it was like
he was talking about his underwear, or like
his wife's underwear. Yeah,
his wife's underwear. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It's a weird squash match, but for whatever reason, it always just makes me happy. And then I'm like, oh, Warrior versus Hogan's next. And
yeah,
it's like
true.
Great. It's like it just does it. It just does its job, like what it's supposed to be on the card.
I totally agree.
Like,
you know what? I think speaking of doing our job, is to take a break right now.
Oh boy!
But we will be back right after this.
Oh, hi, folks. I'm here in this appropriate acoustic environment to rehearse the Russian national anthem with my favorite Soviet Union tag team partners, Nikolai Volkov and Boris Zhukov. You ready, guys? Okay, I don't plan to hit it that hard, but I'll do my best. I get no kick from Ukraine.
Hey, that's not the Russian national anthem.
I know that. It's just a little joke to warm up the crowd. Give us a break here. Okay, here we go.
Hey!
Hey, yourself. I know it's not the Russian national anthem. What is it?
You play the Polish national anthem.
Well, send your postcards directly to him. Anyway, we're still warming up. Here we go now. A one and a two and... Perestroika and glasnost, I dig them the utmost. And how is your sister tonight?
Hey, we're getting hot for you warming up. Let's go.
Enough with the hay. No more stalling. Okay, let's do one from the heart, folks. Let's do one for the homeland. Let's hear it for Mother Russia. Here we go. I don't believe you. Take it easy. On that note, this is Steve Allen in the speed stick room. Sending it back up to you, Jesse. I'm going to get out of here. You can get killed around here.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, our WrestleMania special. And I just, before we get back into talking with the one and only NetCup, Scott Keith, I wanted to remind you folks to check us out on Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us at OVP Podcast at gmail.com. That is OVP Podcast at gmail.com. And Quinn, we have a web presence and a site with the videos on it or something.
Yeah, we got a web presence, OVPPodcast.com.
Yep.
And you can also go to the YouTube.com and look for our account, the OVP Podcast account.
Yep, that's right. Scott's actually been nice enough to post all of our Hall of Fame bites on his blog.
Yeah, which, there's Hall of Fame bites, and there's a couple of weird live streams.
Behind-the-scenes videos.
Behind the scenes, me and Joe just screwing around.
Yeah, it's fun.
If you're interested in that, yep. You can go over there, check that out, and some promo videos, too. It's kind of the best ofs.
Yeah, the best of OVP.
Although, those are getting a little behind. I'm going to have to update that soon.
Yes, you will.
Yeah.
So, we're talking to Scott Keith, of course. And, Scott, I wanted to introduce our last segment by letting you know we have a friend, Quinn.
Yes, we do.
Who just recently purchased a WWE Network account within the last couple months. And he was a fan in the Attitude Era and watched a little bit of the stuff with us during, like, the Daniel Bryan era, we'll call it.
Yeah.
But other than that, not like a connoisseur, obviously, you know, with a finer taste like the three of us are here. And so he'll text us occasionally, Scott, and he'll say, what's the best WrestleMania or what should I watch? So, Scott, we wanted to pose this to you. If you had to just tell somebody, maybe a casual fan, you know, here's some WrestleManias that are really good top to bottom. Here's something you should watch. What are some of the ones you would throw up?
Well, I guess it depends on how much time you have as a fan. I mean, my favorites, it's the one we were talking about earlier. I think if you want something from the older thing that has a lot, it's kind of like something for everybody. I think WrestleMania 7 is actually quite an underrated one.
Yeah.
It might be worth, you know, throwing out there and watching, I think. WrestleMania 6, of course, as well, was another good one.
Yeah.
I feel like it didn't have top to bottom, you know, great or even good wrestling, I don't think, but you know there was a lot of stuff that was kept short, at least, you know, and it introduced a lot of characters.
One thing about six that I always say is Hogan Warrior is the definition of a main event.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's such a big match.
I think as a show, though, it's actually
it's a fun experience.
It's well put together.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what I aim for in recommendations too. So
yeah, I think the one going up a little bit into past the Attitude Era, WrestleMania 20 is just, you know, fantastic show top to bottom. Like, there's so much great stuff on that one, right? Like, John Cena wins his first, you know, singles title.
Yeah.
Over the Big Show there, you know, you got the fantastic Chris Jericho Christian match with the Trish Stratus turn.
Yes.
You know, the very underrated Evolution against Mick Foley and The Rock.
That's a great match.
It's a great match. You know,
solid.
Yeah, like, it's just some solid stuff on that show. Goldberg against Brock Lesnar and their first encounter.
Yeah.
Dubious encounter.
With Austin just stunning them both to end it. The best part of it.
Yeah.
MSG turned on it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And someone won the main event. I don't know who, but
Stevie Richards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Quinn, what would you say are a few that you would throw out there as must-see recommendations to a casual fan?
Right. Well, I think Scott hit it right on the head with 6 and 7. I do find 3 to actually be a well-put-together, like, show.
It's got, like, the big show atmosphere.
Yeah, and you know what? It's surprisingly to me, maybe some people will disagree, but I feel like it's aged pretty well. Like, I know it's got some weird stuff on there, but, like, I don't know. It comes off like the product looks big time for the first time, and it looks like you can put it in a package, wrap it up, and give it to someone as a gift. Like, it's just a well put together show.
It is one of the shows that has very few, And I'm not talking about star ratings, okay?
Yeah.
But very few dead spots.
Right.
As far as a show holistically is concerned.
Yeah.
You know, it flows.
Right. It flows well. I think 10 is actually a pretty good, like, just yeah. a nice little package of its time.
I don't know. Yeah. 10. Scott, what do you think of 10 as a whole?
I mean, I loved it at the time, but now it's obviously a two-match show. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, it's two mm-hmm. fantastic matches.
Yeah.
Of course. I agree. But yeah, it was definitely one. I think it worked better. Like I say, it worked better of the time. I mean, Crush against Randy Savage still kind of holds up. But I mean, like nowadays, if I'm watching it, I'm watching Bret Hart, and then I'm like, you know, fast forwarding the shit out of the show.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Sean
getting
Razor
to the main events. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But so. I guess if you've never seen it before, I think it's a worthwhile watch.
I guess.
Like, oh, yeah.
I think it totally is. And I think it would actually still be enjoyable. No,
yeah,
be honest,
I mean, if you've never seen it before, but I mean, I've literally seen the ladder match like
yeah.
must
yeah.
be 500 times now in, like, right. in my life, right? You know, like beat a tape trader. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know.
Now, gentlemen, do we put WrestleMania 17 into this discussion as a top to bottom show?
I would.
Yeah, it's the greatest show of all time. So yeah, yeah. I just figured it was too obvious to bring up. To be honest.
Right.
But, especially if your friend is an Attitude Era baby. So I mean, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's. If we were to recommend it to fans now, I think it's probably the best. It's I guess the vision of WrestleMania is like, I think that's like
Show Carcel and Immortals.
Yeah, it's the peak, right? It's going to be very hard to top it.
Yeah,
it was so big the entire Attitude Era couldn't follow it. Like it was, yeah. They're just like, oh, that's it. Let's pack it
that's
in.
It.
Let's go home. Goodbye.
Never going to beat
home.
This one.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly. That's
very very good way to look at.
And if I was going to recommend just another one as a package, that's I guess if you've been living under a rock in the last couple years, if you haven't watched wrestling,
yeah.
I'm sure we don't have a lot of those fans. But if you also maybe you just got into wrestling recently and you're looking for retro stuff, that's technically retro.
Yeah.
30.
I like 30.
Yeah. 30 as a package to me, I think it's very. It's just a very well done show, and it's surprising to see how well done it is.
What do you think, Scott, of 30?
Well, I'm going to be honest. All those ones run together for me after a time.
Okay.
So, like,
that's
is that's the Daniel Bryan show?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That was good. I mean, honestly, I only remember the Daniel Bryan stuff from it. Like,
fair enough.
And I mean, if I was to make my case for it, Scott, is just like it's got. Not only does it open with a hot match with Triple H versus Daniel Bryan, but uh-huh. it's got some feel-good moments in it, like when the Shield like just crushes all the old guys.
The New Age Outlaws and Kane, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's a great
moment.
That
was awesome. They kill
sure.
him.
Right, and it's got Taker's loss in it.
Which is shocking, okay. if nothing else.
Yeah.
The match sucks. Sure, okay.
And yeah. just even if you know it happens, to see the crowd reaction is almost entertaining enough in itself.
Right.
It's yeah. got a pretty good main event.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, for me, if we're talking about the more modern ones, I find the first Cena Rock show to be more memorable than 30 was, just overall, because you had, like, you know, obviously you had Cena against Rock, which is great. You had
yep.
CM Punk against Chris Jericho,
yep.
which was also, you know, like a really good match. You know, had one of the ladder match clusters in it that was,
yep.
you know, it was really good. I mean, I don't know. I found it overall to be, if I'm comparing, I think that one, I think, sticks in my mind. A little bit more. Plus, I think the set was a little bit better than WrestleMania 31 was too. Just like it's a memorable looking show with the
sure.
palm trees and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I'm old now, and you know, like I say, it's just
yeah.
The modern shows. It's you know, kids these days with their WrestleManias, and it's just all.
I'm with you, Scott. A lot
no,
of them,
I know.
A lot of them blend into me.
Absolutely.
The reason I actually said 30 is because it's one of the only modern ones that pops to me.
Well, yeah. It's because of Daniel Bryan, Quinn.
Well, and not only that, I just think it's overall. I've seen it a couple times, and I love the card. The card is a good card.
It's fun.
It's just a good card. Like,
who does Cena fight at that? Is that a
Bray Wyatt?
Bray Wyatt.
Yeah,
he beats him though.
Yeah, he beats him. But again, it's another just. If you haven't watched it before, it's just
it's a good show.
Maybe you want to see Cena versus Bray Wyatt. I don't know.
I would tell a casual fan to watch the first WrestleMania, and they'll probably bore the shit out of them.
I don't know. It doesn't. I don't think it holds up. Especially for
yeah. You know what? You're right, Scott. It doesn't hold up. It's less awkward than two.
It certainly is less awkward than two, but I mean, like, even so, when you get to stuff like Brutus Beefcake against David Sammartino, it's just like, why is this on this TV show?
Yeah, you know? that is weird. you know, if I was to throw an oddball out there, and I don't know, you guys can just crap all over it if you want.
Okay,
but
let's do that.
I always found WrestleMania 2000 just so wacky that it's
I can't
fun.
Stand that show.
Like I just love the hardcore battle royal so
I do
much.
Like that. Like, I'll give you that.
And like just it's just so goofy. Like
I don't
it's
like
the,
that
it's,
show.
The Chester McCheeserton and all like God. It's just so silly.
Isn't that the one where the only singles match is Terry versus the Cat?
That is probably the one, yes.
Yeah.
Also it had a 6-hour pregame show.
I still wish for they had saved that somewhere because it's hilarious.
Ivory
and the coach, yeah. But I'm only saying it because I think if you're just looking for like a bunch of stupid fun for 3 hours, it's just goofy enough.
Road, you might as well recommend WrestleMania 15 then, and like you know the
15.
It's you know like it, if, I guess 15 could have a recommendation as like the summation of everything wrong with the Vince Russo era put in one show, right? Like,
yeah, you know, right.
It's like Billy Gunn's, you know, he's going for the Intercontinental title. The Road Dogg's going for the Hardcore title.
What
but
was
people
that?
Expect that. So let's switch it around. Yeah. You know, like.
I think 15's more the negative. I think 2000's more the completely out there weird one, and 17's like, hey, let's bring all the better stuff together. You know what I mean? It's like they almost like figured that out.
Right. Well then, speaking of the Attitude Era, then what do you folks think of 14? Does that hold up?
Does it hold up? I don't.
I mean, it was a good show. I mean, I like it less every time I watch it. But I mean,
I remember the dumpster match being fun.
Yeah, the dumpster match was good. I mean, there was nothing on the show that I considered bad outside of maybe the Undertaker Kane match. But even then, it was just, you know, it was Undertaker Kane, right? It wasn't like egregiously terrible or anything like that.
Right.
But I mean, like the Sable match was quite
was
good
fun.
for something. It was fun. Yeah, it was 14 was good overall. I think one that's really underrated, I think, is WrestleMania 19.
You know what? I agree.
It doesn't get enough love.
That's a good point, Scott. Quinn and I were talking about 19, I feel like, the other day.
Yeah.
The thing with 19 is that it was such a failure that Vince McMahon really has erased it from history, essentially. Like, Vince just hated that show.
Really?
And it was such a bomb that I think that, it just suffered from you know, being... Nobody talks about it anymore because Vince doesn't like it, so it doesn't exist.
Wow,
that's interesting. I never knew that he had a dislike for it. I just kind of figured it's a weird transition period era.
Oh yeah, because like, it's definitely post Attitude, obviously, but it's pre Cena.
And I think there's a really, really historic thing in it too. I mean, like the first time The Rock ever beats Steve Austin, right? Like that was huge.
And
you know, the end of Steve Austin. I mean, like, you know, that was. I have gone back and watched that show for fun a couple of times. Yeah, it was, I think the show holds up. There's a really good Matt Hardy, Rey Mysterio match on it that I think is you know, worth watching for you know, people who are just looking for that, you know, like cruiserweight style.
Yeah.
You know, and classic. It's not a classic or anything like that, but I mean, you know, it's a decent match. It's a really visually interesting one as well.
Safeco Field,
Safeco
Field, you know, which they never gone back to again because again, Vince hated it. So like, it's
well, it's like dark for part of it. It's weird.
The lights go out during a very underrated and underappreciated Shawn Michaels Chris Jericho match.
That's another good match too. That's right. Yes.
Yeah. It's a decent WrestleMania, it does get overlooked, and this is going to sound really stupid, but I think one of the reasons I just didn't watch it as much is because it was the first WrestleMania I had on DVD rather than VHS tape. This is going to sound really stupid, but like it's true. Like I would just, it would be sitting amongst all my VHS tapes at the time of when that like transition was happening. And then, like, it somehow got lost in, like, the bin of my VHS tapes, so I just never really touched it. Like,
Quinn, only you.
Well, you know, this is WrestleMania 19 also, I don't know if you guys remember when they were first releasing the DVDs in that year, it was 2003, all of the DVDs for 2003, if you put them together on the bookshelf, it formed like a picture, right?
Yeah,
that's why I remember WrestleMania 19, because it also, it's like... it threw off my collection too, because I'd have all the WrestleManias in a row in there, right? But 19 I had to put with the other ones because it was
right.
It formed the picture with the other ones, right? So yeah, it was an outlier in that one.
It actually is kind of funny to think. I'm glad you kind of noted that, Scott, because like it is part of that DVD transition for some weird reason. Like it just would sit on my shelf by itself, away from all my VHS tapes, and I'd just be like, I don't know what to do with this show.
I think no one does.
Yeah.
Because you're right, no one ever talks about 19. I mean, if nothing else, I'm not saying it was good. It had Vince McMahon against Hulk Hogan. It's weird.
Which should on paper be like a big deal, I guess.
Yeah, it was
like,
okay, right? Yeah. I mean, Hogan went over as he should have.
It had Roddy Piper getting involved in a surprise and everything like that. Yeah, no, it was okay.
Brock Lesnar almost broke his neck.
Brock Lesnar almost broke his neck. Yeah.
So
it was a good match. That was a good underrated feud with Kurt Angle too that he had. Like, it was, yeah.
And they had a good show. They had the respect hug at the end or something, right? Didn't they?
I believe so.
Am I wrong?
I thought there was a hug.
Maybe that's off camera. I've seen a clip.
I've seen the clip too.
Angle hugging Lesnar after the match, but maybe it's not. Maybe it wasn't filmed. I don't know.
Well, their feud continued on for a while after that, didn't it? So.
Yeah, I think it did.
It did.
Maybe it was one of those things where it was like...
they thought he was hurt.
The mutual respect, and then they moved on. You know, I want to switch gears just slightly here to wrap up these last few minutes of the show. Okay. WrestleMania, for all of its good moments, has also had some stinkers. I would say, as much as I hate to admit it, the most like frowned upon WrestleMania that I hear of is WrestleMania 9. And
what?
Quinn,
that is a hot take.
Now, Quinn, you and I think have already discussed this.
Yeah.
Scott, is 9 the worst? And if it's not, what is the worst WrestleMania in your opinion?
My opinion has since been swayed over the years. I used to champion 9 as the worst, but since then, I am all in with WrestleMania 11. Now,
yes!
I'm just...
Thank you.
I am all about that show as the biggest piece of shit in WrestleMania history. Yeah,
I agree.
It's pretty garbage.
It is.
WrestleMania 9 was at least memorable. You know, that's the one thing I will give it. It was terrible, but they were swinging for the fences, and
But
WrestleMania 11, it was just like, okay, well, we'll go out there and we'll, you know, have Bret Hart against Bob Backlund.
Yeah. WrestleMania 11, I'm going to say, is like, it feels like it's like, oh wait, it's time for WrestleMania. It's like we thought we were going to film Superstars today or something.
Yeah, is the Hartford Civic Center available? Yeah, we need to do WrestleMania.
WrestleMania in Hartford. Who are they going to attract to Hartford for celebrities? Yeah. You know, like
we only live about 2 hours from Hartford. I ain't going there for anything. Let me tell you, no way.
You wouldn't even go there for WrestleMania.
No. Hartford? Have you ever driven in Connecticut?
Yes.
Sucks.
It does suck.
Anyway, you know what, Scott? I have always said that 9's not the worst, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend that it's really, really good. Yeah. I don't think it's the worst.
I guess my only like comparable argument just for the sake of it.
With 9?
Is 9 just to 11's point, just about environment.
11 blows.
I know a lot of people love that whole Coliseum thing.
Yeah, it's
however,
interesting.
Wait.
Okay.
You kind of rag on 11 for looking small and like, because it's just the Hartford Civic
Center
or whatever.
Quinn, they should have filmed it here.
But 9 looks literally like the tiniest WrestleMania I've ever seen.
No way.
Well, it was literally in the parking lot of the place.
It was.
Yeah. I mean,
it was.
So I can understand that a little bit.
You're right.
I mean, again, at least it's visually interesting. I'll say, and again, this is not a ringing endorsement of it. I mean, like, you know, it's way down the bottom of the list. But I mean, if we're comparing them, I mean, I just think at least it has something going for it where you can look at it and be like, okay, well, Jim Ross is in a toga. This is WrestleMania 9 we're seeing. But I mean, WrestleMania 11, it's like, well, am I watching a WrestleMania? Am I watching a Coliseum video from the time? You know, like, what am I watching here?
Right? I could be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that Lawrence Taylor, Quinn, and Bam Bam, you picked as one of the worst
main events.
I put
it in
events.
The Rushmore of worst WrestleMania main events.
Yeah,
I agree.
And not as a wrestling match.
But
not as a wrestling match.
However, you did also agree that Bret Yoko was pretty awful.
No. Hogan's involvement. Bret Yoko is pretty decent. For what?
Joe.
Scott.
Prairie Yoko was decent. I got to say, oh yeah, on the Lawrence Taylor thing, I was raging about this, and when I was going back and doing the Raw reviews at the time, as a fan, Lawrence Taylor doesn't mean shit to me because I don't watch football,
right?
And I live in Canada,
yeah.
So I mean, it's like, what do we care about Lawrence Taylor? You know,
well, he's my favorite football player.
Yeah, but you're from New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. He was on the Giants, so yeah.
Well, Scott, what if it was Doug Flutie?
Canada, man, nothing. What if it was Doug Flutie? Oh yeah, no, hey, that would be that might be something then. Absolutely, yeah.
No, but
but just but
you're what? Right though. You're right. The guy in California doesn't care about Lawrence Taylor, really.
Right. That's right, exactly.
I just one thing I actually want to ask you, Scott. We had talked about this about how I feel like Bret in no way possible should have lost to Yokozuna at that WrestleMania 9. Do you agree? Like, I think that's like one of the biggest blunders. Like, I if Bret had not shown up at King of the Ring and done what he did, I really would have taken him down as a main event star.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, they you know, historically, they should have went with Bret. And yep. I think in WrestleMania 10 shows that you know, there's Vince realizing that, yeah, okay, yeah, we should have stuck with Bret all along, basically. Right. That's what he was kind of saying there. I mean, you know, like Yoko was kind of like after years of the babyface champion, then suddenly Vince got into his mind that, oh, you know, people want to see, you know, the heel champion and the babyface chasing.
Right.
And yada, yada. But I just don't think it worked. I think it was the wrong time for it.
Hogan. I think,
yeah. Exactly. And then Hogan. Yeah.
The douchiest version of WWF Hogan ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the black guy just makes him look so stupid, too. Like when he's like rubbing his chin, holding the belt.
Yeah.
I just want to punch him in the little Hulkamaniac.
Well, you know all I think saying? Of when I see that Hogan is the one giving thumbs up, signing a WCW contract with Eugene Okerlund.
It's that Hogan. Exactly. Bullshit. Never defends a title until King of the Ring.
Not that he really defended the title before.
Hey, on Saturday Night's main event,
But I'm saying, by that point, when he was champion by, you know, 91, he wasn't really doing anything.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, like, by 93, too, it was clearly, it was done, it was over for him. Yeah. I mean, he came out there, he wasn't doing the steroids anymore, and it's just like, he looked like another guy, right? And fans were clearly not into the whole idea. Yeah.
No.
It was really sad.
It was sad. So I will agree that 11 is definitely probably at the bottom of my list. It always has been. But I want to throw another one at you, gentlemen.
Okay.
WrestleMania 2 is pretty shitty. No?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's
yes.
another bad one.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first of all, it's awkward.
Yeah.
Very awkward.
They tried to do the Starcade thing with the multiple locations, and it didn't work for Starcade. I don't think it was going to work for them, and it didn't.
Well, I mean, if Susan St. James can't save the show.
Uh-oh. George. Yeah. George.
What a weird show that is. Just aesthetically, the matches, I mean, what's the best match? Are the Bulldogs against the Dream Team, probably?
That's probably the
Bulldogs
best match.
Dream Team, I find the Funks against Tito Santana and JYD kind of underrated
actually,
as well.
Yeah.
You're right. That's good.
Yeah, but like everything else, my God, they were cutting down like the Moolah match got cut down to literally like what, like 1 minute long or something like that. It's just like the time management was terrible on there. And like the poor people who were like, who were at the other locations were having to sit through like the, you know, like the closed circuit showings and stuff. It was, why would you want to pay tickets to go see that, and then you have to sit and watch a movie screen for like, you know, an hour and a half or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's what a weird concept.
Not to mention the Elvira flipping out about blood, even though she's the mistress. Yeah. I always bring that up.
Yeah, and you know what? If it wasn't for Bret versus Steve Austin, 13 is another candidate for one of the worst, I think. Bret Austin is the only thing that saved that show as far as I'm concerned, because it's in the Rosemont Horizon, but Quinn, it's like you said, where they're like, oh, it's time for WrestleMania. Let's do it at this arena here, you know?
That show very much felt like just another pay-per-view in the cycle. Absolutely.
The Sultan versus The Rock, you know?
The Rock, yes.
Yeah, and that Ahmed Johnson with the Legion of Doom thing.
Yeah, no one cared anymore.
That was, and everyone's like, what? Like, yeah, that card is like the worst thing ever.
Undertaker Sid?
I actually, even though that is a one-match card, I think it's the most like insufferable WrestleMania card.
It's pretty hard to watch, but like, so is 11.
Yeah, but I actually always found 13 to be more of a drag than 11, at least. At least 11, there's consistency in its crappiness.
Yeah.
It's like 13 is just down in the dumps. Like, it should just, Like every match looks like it belongs on Superstars on, you know, Sunday. Oh, yeah. Sunday Superstars.
13 I don't even watch. Like I watched, yeah, you know, one match obviously, but yeah, the rest of it, yeah, it's just not something I go back and do again.
Yeah,
and nor do I blame you. I also think 15 is very hard to watch for me looking back. Mm-hmm. I don't like watching 15 at all. Because
15 is not tough to watch. I find it's okay to watch, but it's just such a car wreck.
Yeah,
like you know, so it has that to it. I guess like I don't find it difficult to watch. I just hate watching it while I'm doing it. I guess
yeah, because I mean, even the main event, Rock Austin, like I could take that or leave that. They've had better matches after that, so it's not like the climax of their feud, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Rock, yeah, it's just like a whatever Rock Austin match. But I, you know, the thing about WrestleMania is this. And this is the thing that pisses me off to close here. As much as I can sit here and complain about how it's not the way it used to be, as much as I can say they should be doing this, why aren't they doing this? I miss Gorilla Monsoon, you know? Mm-hmm. Why don't they do this?
Yep.
Guess who is watching fucking WrestleMania on Sunday?
Us. Yes.
That is the problem, because no matter what, I always watch WrestleMania.
I agree. I'm the same exact way. I don't know why I do this to myself. And you know, by the end of the show, usually every year I want to say like I'm never watching the WWE ever again. And you know, then you know, WrestleMania comes up or Royal Rumble starts to come up, and you're like, oh, you know.
And that's why you have to begrudgingly, reluctantly give credit to Vince McMahon for making the WrestleMania name what it is. Because if this was just another pay-per-view, I ain't watching it, but it's WrestleMania.
Yep.
What do you think, Scott? Mm-hmm.
It still has the name. I mean, I do them all now because, you know, it's my deal. But I mean, like, can I sit down and watch 6 hours of WrestleMania on Sunday? I don't know, but I'm going to try, I guess. Hope my laptop battery doesn't die on me.
Exactly. You know what? That's the tagline for this year's WrestleMania. Hopefully your laptop battery doesn't die. And folks, with that, it's time to wrap up our show. We want to thank you so much, Scott, for being with us. It's been great as always.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Folks, thank you so much for being with us. And we will, of course, see you Monday for episode number 25.
Yes.
Of our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. In the meantime, be sure to check us out on the Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. That is OVPPodcast@gmail.com. And Quinn, they can check us out where? OVPPodcast.com, I understand?
Yeah, the OVPPodcast.com
and
website.
And the YouTube.
And YouTube and iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all the stuff.
Oh, and leave us an iTunes review, folks, if you like us, because we would like that.
Yes.
All right. Well, folks, for Michael Quinn and Scott Keith, I am Joel Murata. Have a very happy WrestleMania. We will see you on Monday.
See ya.
See you later.
Gene, it is an absolutely incredible experience for me. You know, I've had all of the guys on the show at one time, all of the WWF superstars. I've had a Hulk. Hulkamania lives, you know, the Hulk himself. I've had Macho King. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've had them all on the show, and they're the greatest. But now I'm a guest on their show, and I'm having a terrific time out there just hanging around with the guys, talking it over, except for one guy who I can't get close to.
Who is that?
Well, he scares me a little bit. Really. Earthquake. Earthquake. So big, Gene. I mean, he's awesome. The other night, they tell me, on Hollywood Boulevard, he tipped over a Pizza Hut delivery truck and ate everything inside. Now, that makes me nervous, Gene. It really does.
Regis?
Yes, Gene.
Will you stop?